You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Dean
Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Downton Abbey After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Downton Abbey After Show.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Bing is for doing, and we are here doing another AfterBuzz TV After Show for Downton Abbey Season 3, Episode 3. I'm your host, John Comerford, and I'm joined in the studio by the lovely and talented Tamara Berg.
Hey, everybody.
And the very insightful and cordial. Anyway, Alina Akram.
Hi, everyone.
And helming our booth for us, as always, is Stephen Lemieux.
How's it going, guys?
Thank you, Stephen.
Hey, Stephen.
So lots happening in this show. Let's see. We got a footman who's a hunk. We got Branson on the lam. Edith is a journalist. And we start off with Ethel, our, well, let's see, our one-time maid who is now, well, she's
fallen on hard times.
Yeah, she's
as they
on,
say.
She's been on the what? How did Mrs. Hughes? She's
fallen on hard.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I thought it was a certain path that she's walking down.
The road to ruin,
there
no way back.
That's it. That's what Mrs. Hughes said. So, and they've been hinting at this for the last few weeks because Isabel has seen her a few times. They've almost got together, but you know, every time Isabel says, "Come on in, let me help you," Edith runs away. I'm sorry,
Ethel.
Not Edith,
Ethel runs away.
And then finally we get this storyline. And I didn't see any of this coming. I thought for sure she would not do this and give up her son. Did anybody see that happening?
Well, I don't know. She sees what a good, or she has seen,
yeah,
living in these people's houses,
yeah,
what a good life and good upbringing can provide.
Oh, yes, and the opportunities and that are there. And I thought that was interesting in the hallway when she was talking to Isabel about that. She, you know, Isabel saying, you know, you don't have to do this. He may not go to the best school, but he'll have his mother's love. And she, of course, says, yeah, where did Matthew go to school?
Right. Exactly.
And you never hear Mrs. Crowley quiet, but she didn't have anything to say after that.
No, yeah. She didn't.
Yeah.
No, she didn't.
But, you know, I was thinking about it, you know, because, you know, she, you know, wants Mrs. Hughes to write this letter again to the Bryants. And boy, isn't he the fun guy, huh, Mr. Bryant?
Oh, my gosh. He's just a wretch.
Horrible. He's wretched.
Just a horrible man.
And I thought it was really interesting that Ethel called him out on that. You're not a nice man or a kind man. But I think
you do love Charlie.
And that's the thing, you know. It's a huge sacrifice for her. But I thought, you know, that, you know, she's going to try to work something out. Like, look, you can have time with the son. You should have a relationship with him. Help him out. Don't help me out. Just help him out. But I didn't see her giving up her son completely.
I agree with you. I didn't see that coming at all.
No.
When they offered her money, I was like, oh, she's definitely going to take it. This issue has been resolved.
Yeah.
But,
well, and also when, I just forgot what I was going to say. I'm so sorry. Okay. I just got off topic.
I thought, you know, why didn't you work anything out? I mean, clearly that would have been possible. What would be the reason for not trying to do that?
And her, you know, mother-in-law, for lack of a better term, the woman of the couple, grandmother,
yeah,
said, you know, I'll write to you, I'll keep you posted. And she was just kind of like,
yeah,
you know.
I don't think that's, I mean, I don't know if she's going to be able to sustain that. I mean, I understand why she does it. It's understandable that she's, look, I can't give him a life. And clearly the way she was treated, I thought they did a really nice job, by the way.
Yeah.
Of everybody, you know, just shunned completely. I mean, even the servants don't want to have anything to do with her. The way they were doing that, I can't remember Isabel's lady's
name. Mrs. Bird.
Mrs. Bird.
Yeah.
Just not even wanting to look at her, doesn't want to get her coat. I mean, I can't.
Talk about a lack of compassion, though. And I think it's fascinating that Isabel is able to be compassionate. And maybe it's because she has a very fortunate station in life. And,
but she's that way with everybody. She's been that way from the beginning.
That's what I was just going to say.
Yeah.
She is that way with everyone. She clearly is the compassionate voice in this show.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for her whenever she's on there because she is able to, you know, take people at their you know, best and at their worst and still, you know, be kind to them. Good for her.
Yeah, good for her. But I was wondering about that as they were showing that, you know, with meaning what they were showing was how even servants didn't want to be in the same room with them. I mean, Mr. Brian actually says that, I didn't want my wife to be in the same room with you. I mean, you're not even supposed to be in the same location, vicinity, whatever. Yes, go ahead, Elena.
Well, even when Isabel was telling Mrs. Hughes about Ethel, her reaction was like complete shock that she even used the word prostitute
in the home.
Yeah, that's not a word you hear often.
Yeah.
So it's just such a shunned topic that it's not that shocking that
I suppose if you're living in Downton Abbey or living in the village, you really don't have any contact with prostitutes. So they're not
true.
They're not people. To the people that we're discussing, you know what I mean? Someone who has fallen to the life of being a prostitute, you know, they're not real. And that's you know, the basis of a lot of prejudice, and that's what we're talking about here.
And I think that goes to a larger point, because I was noticing in this episode, I mean, they've done it a lot, but specifically in this episode, I was noticing that they were pointing to this idea that the shelter, the cocoon that they live in these places, because Branson even says when I know we're getting to another topic, but this is speaking to this issue, which is you know, Lord Grantham says, you know, boy, you must live in a harsh world, or some, but he's saying it in a rude and derogatory way, and he says we all live in a harsh world. I just know it.
Right.
So obviously he thinks, you know, and from his perspective, they are cocooned. They don't even know what the heck's going on around them, and this is the same thing that you know, it's not like prostitutes are new. So,
but indeed.
Yeah. So, but and then there was one other point they were making on that. One other time they were talking about it.
About prostitution.
Yeah. Well, that was it. The prostitution is not a word you hear. Even the word is not something. Not that you would bandy out that thing around in the likes of Downton Abbey, but so this cocoon thing is happening, and that, you know, obviously the new order is coming in. The modern times are coming in to invade, and we're seeing that more and more. But I just thought the way they did it here was much more subtle, in a sense that even Branson had something to say to him, and then even the fact that you couldn't hear the word prostitute, and then of course. The fact that Lady Crowley at the end, when the kid is taken away, she's got nothing to say.
No.
What can you do for a woman who has been down that road to ruin?
And that scene was just heartbreaking.
Oh, the kid in the car.
Watching, you know, first of all, the child was so adorable. And, you know, at that young, has a British accent. Just kidding.
Yeah.
It's an old joke in our family. But he was so adorable, and she... clearly she had this pain on her face, but I was surprised she wasn't doubled over and, like, you know, vomiting. Yeah. She was so... because it's so sad. Yeah. But I guess it's a testament, again, to that sort of British stiff upper lip. Mm-hmm. You got to get through it because this is the right thing to do, and that's what I'm going to do.
Great. And also a wonderful way to show that what were the alternatives at the time? What choices did they have?
None, really.
She had a job as a maid that went by the wayside, and now the only way she'd make money is through this. I mean, come a long way, baby.
Yeah.
Virginia Slim and the whole thing. But mm-hmm. I just thought that was a tragedy that, you know, this is, she had to give up a child merely because she's so shunned by society.
Right.
And I was wondering, how is Mrs. Crowley's effort to get these ladies off this path and onto something better? How is that even going to be possible in this world?
Right.
In the world that they live in right
now. Right.
It's so unrealistic to me because...
it's so insurmountable.
I mean, something like Edith writing a letter to a newspaper is shunned or not looked down upon.
Yeah. Yes.
So imagine trying to hire a prostitute into, you know...
Yeah.
Right. And these people don't think, even though Lord Grantham was talking about, when they were talking about potentially losing the house, he was saying, he and Mary were both saying, it's our duty because we employ people.
Yes.
So it's their duty to a certain degree. But when they have an opportunity to really help someone like Ethel and really help her, you know, come out of this terrible part, you know, maybe that's not really our duty. So it's an interesting sort of double standard.
Yeah, because of duty, but they also have... reputation.
Right.
I don't think Mr. Carson would even allow it, because if you guys noticed, Mrs. Hughes wouldn't even bring it up to him.
Yeah, she wouldn't
say
it.
She said,
yeah, I can't,
don't worry about it.
Tell you. Like,
but so let's stay on that tack a little bit, because then Edith does write a letter. So, because obviously she's downstairs at the breakfast table eating breakfast with everybody.
Why?
Yes. And Matthew's going, what the hell are you doing down here? Why aren't you upstairs having breakfast? And of course, Edith says, because I'm single.
Yeah. Because yeah. the unmarried
and,
eat
you know,
breakfast.
That's what they do. But then we're speaking more about the women's side of it. So they've got the vote in England. Well, I should say they do if you're over 30 and you have property.
Right.
Yes.
Then you're able to vote. And of course, we're in America, we're just ratifying. Tennessee's just ratifying the 19th Amendment. So we're 1920, of course. So it's interesting that here's a woman who's fallen so far from grace, not grace, but on the wayward path.
And do you mean Ethel or do you
Ethel?
Mean,
yes. But then on Edith, who's supposed to have all the advantages,
privileges,
and she's relegated to what? She can't even vote.
Well, and that conversation was so interesting where she was saying, what shall I do, garden?
Yeah.
And the Dowager Countess says, oh, good God, let's hope you don't stoop to that.
Yeah, I mean, again, what are their choices?
Yet they don't encourage her to actually write the letter.
No.
Lord Grantham wasn't having it.
He poo-poos it. Carson poo-poos it.
Yes.
So much so that his audible rebuff there. I mean, it was like, whoa.
No comments
from
Carson.
Yeah, but Matthew's the only one that supports it. But he even, gives a hint to Lord Grantham, well, you support it, I want you to think about it. And he might. Lord Grantham might. But the fact that that's it. She's been jilted at the altar, so I've got nothing in my... That's it.
Well, what?
Her life's over.
Do needlepoint, read books, and, dress for dinner.
Mm-hmm. And then Lord Grantham knocks her down even farther because he tells her, well, it's not going to get published anyway,
so
we don't have to worry about that.
Because what a value could she have to say?
Poor Edith is what
poor Edith.
I thought, oh my God.
Well, even when the Countess, Dowager, excuse me, was saying to her,
you're a woman with a brain and a reasonable ability.
Yeah, but the way she said it was only reasonable ability, not amazing ability. You just thought you have reasonable ability. Again, the middle child gets nothing. It's not like, go out there, come on, you can do it. No.
Well, and the follow up.
You have a brain and reasonable ability.
Stop whining and do something about it.
Stop whining and do something about it. So.
Which is actually kind of a modern thing to say.
Absolutely. But, and that's...
a little bit surprising coming from Grandma, which she is surprising from time to time.
Yeah, but also, I think, again, that's, stiff upper lip and stuff. I think that's what that is. Pull your boots, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and let's go. Let's move on. But you still have such narrow confines in which you can move on.
Sure.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Ladies... would you like to live back then?
Oh, good heavens.
Oh, gosh.
As much as I like dressing for dinner and all, I would be driven crazy in that kind of scenario. Mm-hmm. I really would.
But it's great.
There's
you don't have responsibilities.
So
what do you mean? Come on. You don't have to do anything. I mean, how wonderful would that be?
Well, and it's interesting because in the 21st century, I know a very small handful of people who are kind of in this situation, who are independently wealthy. And don't have careers.
Right.
And it's extremely difficult for them. I know two people in this situation.
Wow.
And, you have to have something to do. You have to have something to do. And just sitting around languishing, reading books and doing needlepoint and watching, television is not enough.
I'd imagine I'd get bored. I get bored on vacation after the fourth day. I'm like, what now? I'm done reading. I don't want to do anything else.
Well, have you ever had a job and suddenly didn't have a job? I mean, after you're like, oh, this is great. Maybe like if you quit yourself, this is great. After like a week or after 2 weeks even, you're just like, I need to work. I need to do something during the day. You need to meet people. You need to not be at home just whittling away.
I threw out my neck when that happened to me.
But it's interesting. I mean, and there's absolutely no way we could actually put ourselves in their state. But that's from our perspective, and we're used to working. We're used to, we've had decades of people having careers and stuff. Back then, could they even consider?
They don't know better.
It's not in their frame of mind.
No, what is a weekend?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's what's...
Yeah, it's a different frame of mind, but
especially women.
But that's what's coming into society
now.
So again, that's one of the things that's interesting about.
And I think the fact that they're talking about the vote is very interesting because that's just another way of showing that it's coming.
Society is changing.
There's nothing you can do to stop it. Yep. Progress is going to be made.
And I feel like Matthew plays that part in the show, and he keeps hinting at it, especially with Edith, or when he was trying to discuss the letter. What was it? The books with.
The ledgers and the books of the running of the estate. So.
Yeah, all right. Well, since you talked on that, let's move on to that real quick.
Great. I thought it was interesting that Mary was trying to advise Matthew, like, listen, you got to stand up to him. He's my dad. I know better is how I took it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I hope he takes her advice. And I think he's not going to have a choice to because already, Lord Grantham is already starting to dismiss Matthew.
Yeah, it was dismissing.
Yeah, there is the beginning of the power play show starting to show.
Well, I mean, it wasn't really overt either. It was very, you know, just like, we'll talk about it later.
We'll talk about it later,
With the sharing, you know, having the cigars, and they're doing the man of the house things or the lord of the house things and stuff like that. Even Carson's wondering who am I going to respond to, who am I paying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly that's going to come to a head.
Yeah.
And I think the funny thing was that the person Matthew goes to for advice and all this is the Dowager.
I know.
But if you think, then on second thought, I go, well, who else would you go to? Who's navigated this minefield more than she has?
Right.
That's true.
Right.
So who's got the most experience? So.
Her shock was hysterical to me, though. Like, what? Mismanaged. Yeah. How dare you?
And there's going to be a great number of noses out of joint.
Out of joint.
Which is a wonderful way of saying it. And, okay, so we're setting that up. We know that will come to pass.
Yes.
So, but I don't recall any being anything else on that particular. Was there any other part of that? I think they're just setting up,
of the Lord Grantham and Matthew thing?
Yeah.
Oh, just the, if we're just talking about Matthew, Matthew and Mary. You know, maybe a little tension there. We're not exactly sure.
Yeah, well, they got to keep that going. Well, the other tension was in the room.
Right, the baby. The potential baby. Yeah. It's not a nursery anymore. It's our new, whatever it was, study sitting room. And what if we need a nursery for the baby?
Uh-huh. Do you think she was hiding something, or do you think she just didn't know?
I'm guessing she's either worried about fertility, uh-huh, or she's not ready for a baby, and he's eager for one. He seemed pretty excited asking about it.
Yes. So, yeah, he did.
And then again, that goes with the whole new way of thinking. She's not ready for a kid, but he's still traditional in that sense. Like, hey, we're married now. What's next?
Yeah, exactly. Get to it, lady.
So I don't know.
Do you think she wants one?
I think she does, but I'm kind of torn in between the two. Because Mary's pretty independent, or she's proven to be as traditional as she is.
Well, if you talk Pamuk, she's a little traditional.
Yes. So,
all right.
I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, that takes us to a moment where we can thank all you AfterBuzzers who are tuning into iTunes and downloading for us. So we appreciate that. The comments that are coming, we want to thank you for that. That keeps us honest. Obviously, we want you to let us know where we missed the items and where we're doing well. So we want to thank you for that. And make sure you comment, tell a friend, because that's what keeps us going here. We have over 60 shows happening this in the weeks to come, 60 shows a week. We have 3 million downloads a week as well, and that's all because of you, the fact that you're downloading and telling friends. So thank you very much for
that. Thank you. And we do read the comments, so do let us know. And, we make adjustments as we hear them, and we continue doing the things that you like. So let us know, and that's how we can deliver the show that you want to hear.
All right, but that takes us to Sybil and Branson, because Branson is obviously on the lam, running, it's like, where is he running from? But it's almost like, it felt like he ran all the way from Ireland.
It did. He ran from Ireland.
In the rain.
Well, and at this time, it was a bit of a political, there was a lot of political upheaval.
Yeah, when hasn't there been in Ireland?
Good point.
In Irish history, British American, British Irish history.
But he was involved. You know, he's involved in some revolutionary.
Well, yeah,
talks and
uprisings. So to speak. I mean, it's like Easter Rebellion kind of stuff where they throw a lord and lady out of a castle, they burn it down.
Yeah, and I found it so interesting that he was describing his experience of it and he had some remorse.
I know, it turned him a little
bit. But I thought it was fascinating because he said, because I do watch Downton Abbey with the glow of the beauty of the Edwardian time, right? Uh-huh. And he said exactly that. You know, you look at these places and see genteel living and civility, and I see something different. I see something. What was the word he used? Grotesque or something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember the word. Yeah.
And I, it kind of helped me see where he was coming from. But then again, the humanity came out in him when he saw the people who were, running out of their burning house.
And he saw the children
watching their home burn. Yeah.
And obviously, being a soon-to-be father, I'm sure that's going to have more of an effect on him now than it would before.
Absolutely.
And being married to a lord's daughter, I feel like, is what has
huge
influenced
conflict.
Him.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was what a great part of his storyline to keep that conflict going, because, he was so principled and almost to a
a caricature almost.
Because it was like, okay, we get it. Yeah, you're such a staunch proponent of those things. But this really get to see the crack start. Where
made him a little more of a complex character.
Yeah, because before it was a little two-dimensional, and now they're fleshing that out. And I like that a lot because now he's really going to struggle because I think he's still going to be principled about what he thinks, but how to get there is going to be much more nuanced because he even said that he's never been an advocate for violence. I think it was the word he used, something like that. And we'll see how that plays out because now he's going to become a father, and the fact that he's stuck at Downton for a while I'm sure that's going to have an effect on him because obviously the more you are sheltered, the more you're going to tend to enjoy that.
Right, and assume the pallor, is that the right? That's not the right word. Paul, I'm not sure what the right word is. But the mantle of the things that are going on around you, aside from just it being more comfortable, if that's all you see, then it starts to be normal.
Right, and because he has a child on the way, and even Sybil notes this, is that we need to be safe.
Yeah. Right.
So, and the fact, once you have a kid, all of a sudden things change a little bit.
Yeah, you give up the motorcycle. Yeah. That's what happened with so many of the dads that I know.
Yeah. So we'll see. Interesting to see how that plays out with him. I'm sure he'll be principled. I'm sure he's going to go. So that's going to be a great struggle for him.
But again, I loved watching Lord Grantham, being there to defend and protect his daughters.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that was great.
Him just getting
how could you
really,
leave her like
how
that?
How could you leave her in a foreign land?
Yeah. Pregnant.
Because really, that is awful.
That
foreign
is land. Awful.
But I'm going, it's Ireland. I mean, how foreign is that?
It's foreign. They talk that whole language that has weird letters in it that no one of us.
Yeah, but anything outside of their estate is foreign to them. Outside of Downton Abbey.
John's Irish. Of course he's going to defend the motherland.
Thank you very much. And I love the way he went at Branson. That was great.
That's what I was kind of getting at.
It was really great. A heated discussion. That wasn't really much of a discussion.
No, there wasn't discussion.
But at the end of it, I thought the funny thing was he just tells me, he goes, go to bed.
Yes.
Like, what? What?
Well, you can't tell me to go to bed.
Yeah, I was like, what? Wait a minute.
But he could.
What happened to Branson, the crazy rebel that was standing?
Yeah.
He just cried and ran away.
He didn't cry there. He cried
worried
up in
about
the room.
Sybil, though. I mean, he's got to be worried too.
No, sure. Yeah, obviously.
And guilt.
Exactly.
And
so he's a lot of guilt there, and he did leave
her
behind. And even though they had worked it out, I mean, I'm sure he felt horrible about it. I mean, saving his own skin and leaving his wife behind to close up the flat. I mean, what? So I'm sure all that stuff. I just thought it was hysterical that he just tells me to go to bed.
Yeah.
Go to bed. And then he just slumps off. And I just, that's hysterical.
Yeah, that was funny.
But, is the lord of the house, is that part of the thing? You can't just tell anybody to go to bed?
I declare that it is now bedtime.
Yeah, but in the parallel there with, then downstairs, we go downstairs and they're all talking about the same thing.
Yes.
And what does Carson say?
I think it's time to bed.
It's bedtime. Yes. And shuffles
and they all go run off. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. There's the parallels. John, everybody has to go to bed now. They call bedtime. It's like, what? They're all adults.
Lights out.
They're all adults. What? You can call bedtime. You can wait. Time out. Really?
Apparently, you can.
Wow. We'll have to have our research on that.
Yeah.
All right. So whatever happens, what's the next thing? Oh, we find out that Branson, of course, was there at the uprising.
Yes.
And Sybil.
And the police think he has more to do with it. Yeah, and he didn't tell Sybil about
it. Uh-huh.
So there's that friction. And the police, of course, think he has more to do with it than he wants
to
let
on. He's an instigator.
Yeah, and so Lord Grantham has to go, of course, and
speak to the authorities on his behalf.
With the secretary, and gets a deal done where, okay, you go back to Ireland, they're going to arrest you. So he's, which I thought was great, because now you have to stay.
Yeah, I do you wonder at all if that was Lord Grantham just saying that, or if that was really the case? Because, he has a vested interest in keeping Branson and Sybil here, so his child can be born at Downton and
he's never really been that kind of Machiavellian, but... where he's,
I could see how he would though for
no,
his daughters.
I think it's a great. I never even thought of it. I totally bought that it was legit.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe he did that just because Sybil's pregnant and I want to keep her here and safe.
I would not put it past him.
Wow, interesting.
Especially after an episode like that.
Yeah,
I didn't even consider that because I never. Yeah. You'd think Lord Grantham, this is his word. He's honest and because he's a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting. I would.
There you go.
Okay.
But what a dilemma for Branson.
Got a little gold star today.
Yeah, you
Is he going to stay with his wife and child, or is he going to go back to Ireland where he's going to continue
he could potentially be arrested, but he could fight for the cause that he believes in.
And he thinks they're in a revolution that may have some own... What do we call it? Well, Ireland's going to be able to rule itself.
So
he wants to be part of that.
Yeah.
So if do I stay with this birth?
Right.
My child? Or the birth of a nation? So what are we going to do? Have fun for Branson.
I don't know.
All right. So what else on that? I think that was it for those guys.
I think it was.
Oh, great. And that allows us to move on to the new footman.
Oh, the new
hotman. It's like all the stuff that's going on in Downton, and they're going, no, hire the good looking
one. Hire the handsome man.
Absolutely. And finally, since of course Matthews decided to invest in Downton, they now have money, so they're going to restaff.
Right.
And they got a new footman, and it's between two, and of course they hire Mary Dallas Carson to hire the
I love how
one.
Mary talked about it. I know why the ladies want him. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should hire him and
give them something to talk about.
Make them a little happier downstairs.
Anybody else could have said that to Carson, and he would have been forget it.
Exactly.
But of course, Lady Mary tells him that, and he's like, okay.
Rip.
Handsome Jimmy Kent.
Of course.
All the girls are smitten.
They're just giddy as all. They're just dumbfounded, just staring agape.
I think Tom's a little smitten, too.
Oh, clearly.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, it was no accident. They saw Tom going by, and the door's open, and the guy's
and
taking his...
shirtless.
Yeah.
And shirtless.
Jimmy's shirtless.
And, you know... since when was it? Season one?
Season one. It was the episode with Pamuk's buddy whose name I don't remember. And there was a something of a relationship between him and Thomas. And we haven't seen any
since.
Any, you know, dalliances at all with Thomas. He's just been conniving with O'Brien all season two.
Right.
So Thomas now, there's going to be something interesting going on here.
He piqued his interest, among other things.
Yeah.
And who do we see lurking?
Hello, Miss.
Who's lurking just after? Again, how many times have we seen Miss O'Brien lurking?
Lurking O'Brien.
So just when last week, of course, she said that she was going to get him back. So now we know. Okay.
Right. She's got something planned.
She does. Yeah, she's found his Achilles heel.
Yes.
So I wonder how she's going to do this.
Well, just so interesting. She just lets the info out just little by little. Just thinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
No reason.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Killing him softly.
Exactly.
So what do we think? All right. So let's go to the surface. Is he a hottie?
James.
Ladies. Yeah, Jimmy James.
Well, James as Carson calls him.
Yes, of course.
Exactly.
He's handsome.
Yes, he's handsome. That's what I called him.
Thank you very much.
Handsome Jimmy Kent.
There you
go. That's his name.
Is that right?
Handsome Jimmy Kent.
Okay.
Well, and it's so funny how everyone is sort of stricken by him, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, ladies, not as well as you do, I'm sure.
Yeah. I was like, wow, they've never seen that. I mean, I guess he's good looking, but everybody's crazy about it. So I was like, okay.
My question is, I didn't get this. Is he the first footman or Alfred? They didn't really.
Well, Alfred says he's the first footman, and I guess because he's been there longer, he should be. But the decision is left up to Carson.
Yeah. Right. And in that particular situation, Carson was giving handsome Jimmy Kent the job of the first footman in that situation. So I suppose we're going to see if that's going to continue or not.
Yeah, they're going to be fighting for.
Yeah, the jockeying for the position, exactly.
Vying for first footman.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right.
Mm-hmm.
I also thought it was interesting how Tom got a little jealous and angry that Mr. Carson was helping Alfred.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was a good little beat because he says, Carson tells me, well, Thomas, because Alfred asked. So there you go. So now
don't feel secure in your position ever because you need to constantly be making.
And Alfred is already winning favor with Mr. Carson by doing so and trying really hard.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
And Alfred, of course, had another little moment with Daisy. So let's wrap this up because I thought that was hysterical. Yeah. Just like he had, you know.
Poor Daisy.
Okay, so.
I know.
Ever since, Mrs. Levinson's maid or assistant or whatever we're calling her was
forward
there.
Maid.
Yes. Is that what her title is? Her forward maid?
No, she was just forward.
She was forward. She was a maid.
Oh, that. I beg your pardon. I thought it was a term.
Yes.
So, yeah. She kisses Alfred. She tells him and she likes him, all this other stuff. And,
she's American. She's a floozy.
Yeah, but Daisy even mentions, she says, what did she say? She asked Alfred if he liked it. And he was just so taken with the fact that she made him feel good about himself that.
Yeah.
So then it's taken, what was that, 2.5 months ago?
At least.
And it's taken Daisy 2.5 months to get to the point where she can finally wants to say something to Alfred. And then that goes back to my other thing about the ladies in this particular era. I mean, 2.5 months, of course, this is England now, being so repressed that it's taking 2.5 months to say that she likes him.
Yeah.
I know.
And she was dropping the hints before.
Yeah, kind of, but he wasn't getting anything, so no. You know, he wasn't understanding anything.
But before she's even interrupted, we're not even sure that she'd come out and directly say something like that. I honestly don't think she'd be that direct.
Well, and it was
maybe
really? No. Well, I don't know
because Daisy and she's so
she's so naive. She's really
it was sweet around. There were people around. I didn't think she'd be that forward with exactly what she was going to say because it seems like if she was going to say something that forward, it would probably be away from somebody. Everybody else would be. More.
I agree, but we'll never know.
No, we won't
because she doesn't get to say it. We get the new scullery maid come in.
Poor girl,
who's prettier than Daisy?
I know.
And poor Daisy's wearing that ugly brown outfit that she never gets out of and always has greasy hair. And in comes this fresh face.
Mm-hmm. Ivy.
So we got a good-looking footman. We have a decent-looking scullery maid. And so they're only hiring
people. She's a cook or something. Well, she's an assistant cook.
No, because I thought...
She's the new kitchen maid, I think.
Yes.
But isn't that mean...
Now Daisy's an assistant cook.
Yeah. Right.
So they're only hiring pretty people at Downton's, but basically what we're saying.
I think that is what we're saying.
Even though Carson says whatever his line is about pretty people or whatever, that hard work and diligence.
To only take you so far?
Yeah.
If only that were true.
Yeah. Clearly, it's not even in his own. He's the guy that's hiring this team. So even he's not following through.
No, he's not.
Terrible.
But we already see the conflict coming up with Daisy.
Yeah, I hope we can be friends.
I know. Poor girl.
She is a widow, you know.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Yeah. She is a widow. Oh, tragic.
Very.
All right, what else we got? Oh, we got Anna and Bates.
Anna and Bates.
I have to tell you, this is interesting. Bates, he's a cool cucumber. But you were asking me about it, the way he was eating and the way he carries himself in prison.
In prison, you know, he's so proper when he's at Downton, and when he's in prison, it really struck me because he was eating, you know, holding his spoon and like shoveling the food in.
Yeah.
And when I saw it, I thought that's just wrong. He would never eat like that.
Yeah.
And I asked you about it.
I said, he would in prison. He doesn't want to stick out. He wants to blend in. You know,
exactly.
They would see that.
He would look like a hoity-toity.
That's right. They would jump all over that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, I mean. But, you know, what's interesting is that here's a guy who can pass between those two worlds pretty easily.
Yes.
Because everybody at Downton thinks he's this moral, ethical, stand-up kind of guy. You know, I don't know about moral and ethical, but they all have a sense of his dignity, I should say, or something, or his integrity.
Mm-hmm.
But in prison,
prison doesn't leave any choice.
Yeah, I know. He's got to do that.
You got to survive, man.
You got to survive. But yeah. I like that you get to see that different side of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, not as far as content of this of the Bates and Anna story in this particular episode, there wasn't a lot going on, mm-hmm. but it was just but that sadness of both of them thinking mm-hmm. that the other had said,
forgotten
you know,
them,
I'm
or,
done.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, he was being gallant mm-hmm. and telling me I should move on with my life, she said, and he said, "Oh, I thought she had given up on me."
Right.
I'm surprised Anna just stayed quiet about it. She didn't go investigate or at least try to visit him because she's been so forward throughout this whole relationship.
She had said that they aren't allowing visitors.
Yeah, he's not allowing visitors. It was an official thing that
she
couldn't.
So it wasn't him.
So we didn't get to see
him.
No,
it wasn't
him contacting
him. No, it was just that
we just didn't get to see her go and be refused.
Yeah,
I see.
But she obviously had gone because she said they're not allowing me, so... But I thought, you know, again, it's a great way to keep the storyline going because how else are you going to do it? It's in prison.
Right.
So we got out of the cell a little bit, which was nice. But and then the fact that when Bates finally gets those cards, the joy on his face, the relief on his face, thank God, and that kind of stuff was just, you know, again, keep stoking that fire.
And that shot was really beautiful.
Yeah, the one between the two when they mm-hmm. finally get their letters mm-hmm. and the nice dissolve between the two so they look like they're in the same room.
And almost having a conversation.
Almost having a conversation.
Yeah,
it was great.
I thought that was really beautiful.
Well shot.
Nicely done.
Yeah. Because we love the
Free Bates.
So do you think that's... Well, let's get... We'll do that when we get to predictions. Well, before we get to predictions, we'll do news. So we have a few little...
AfterBuzz TV News.
All right, what do you got, Tamara?
Well, Matthew Crawley, played by Dan Stevens.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Dan Stevens was voted Britain's best dressed man.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Fancy man.
On the show or outside the show?
Britain's best dressed man. I know. So not a character. He the guy.
All right, I'm going to Google him.
Yeah, he was definitely... He was. Yeah. Stay away from UK sites if you're going to Google him because
they're ahead. They've seen
they
all these
are ahead
episodes.
Of us, and they've seen all the episodes. And yeah. I'm just warning you all that.
Yeah, they may have.
I found out something I didn't want to know today, and I'm sad. And I'm not talking about it because I am not spoiling it for all of you. Downton Abbey star Brendan Coyle has hit out at fans who film him surreptitiously on camera phones.
Ooh.
He says
he's pulling
that
a Jack Nicholson.
This is Bates we're talking about, and he said that he doesn't want to seem like he's ungrateful for having a job because he's thrilled to be having this job. He says, "But what I will say is that every blank on the planet has a camera. I posed for about 40 photographs yesterday, and the thing that annoys him the most is people who." Are pretending not to take when they are.
Okay.
Good
so
to know.
If you're near Brendan, I guess ask first.
Yeah.
So you don't get hit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or be really out of his eyesight if you're going to do it surreptitiously so that he really doesn't see.
And all those wanting to get a shot.
A little bit of a spoiler from him. He says that I pretty much can say that all of us know when Downton is going to end.
Whoa.
This show has a finite life.
They know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know, but that's what he says. You know, the Brit series, except for a couple of those crazy ones that we were talking about before,
Doctor
Coronation
Who,
Street, that's been on for 125 years, and Doctor Who, which has been on forever. You know, the British series tend to be very short.
About how many seasons? Don't tease me.
Well,
we don't know. Here's what I can tell you.
Look at The Office. That was on for, was it three seasons? I think it was three.
Yeah, and they were short. See, they were like five-episode seasons or something like that. But I will tell you, there is going to be a season four for Downton Abbey. It has definitely been confirmed.
Good deal.
And Maggie Smith has been confirmed to come back.
They weren't sure about her.
There had been rumors, or doubts rather, about whether or not she would continue the role. But executive producer Gareth Neame said at last week's post-Golden Globes awards party that she would be back for the fourth series. And Julian Fellowes has said in the past, with Maggie, you never know. Other actors sign on for the next series, and they sign on for this, and they sign on for that, but she doesn't. She stays her own person,
right.
But as far as I'm concerned, I hope she stays with the show until Downton falls down.
Well, you know, she had a big scare a couple years ago fighting cancer, and so wasn't even sure she was ever going to act again. I think Downton was one of the ones that brought her back.
Is that right?
I think so,
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
so I think she plays, you know, decides from, you know, year to year whether what she wants to do.
So she will be back. The other thing that I wanted to talk about was you and I watched it today. There was an interview on CBS with the occupants of Highclere Castle, which is where Downton Abbey is shot.
Yeah.
And
actual castle.
These are modern people. It's the 8th Earl and Lady Carnarvon, who are known as Fiona and Geordie to their friends. And one of their friends is Julian Fellowes, who created Downton Abbey. When they, the house...
The manor has
50 plus bedrooms, and it had not been lived in for more than 15 years when they inherited it. And and the lady said, when we took it on, I think it was at the time of the Iraq War, and this house, like other houses of its ilk, rely on weddings and conference businesses in order to keep the revenue going, and all of our phones were quiet. So I thought, if we're going to give our lives to it, I'm going to try and bring it back. And so Downton Abbey is part of that.
Right.
And it has completely changed the
manor. So that's the thing that's been able to keep them.
They have 1,200
visitors,
tourists who come every day. The other thing that's fascinating about it is that one of the, I think it was the 5th Earl of Carnarvon, was an amateur archaeologist.
Right.
And
but
go ahead.
Are you going to, before you get into the, where that archaeology, tell them about the, who he married.
He married the illegitimate child of
Rothschild
who's the banking, fabulously wealthy.
So this is the real story of the house.
So
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So here he is. You know, he needs money like crazy to keep
the house going
and the grounds and the surrounding.
And plus, fund his hobby of archaeology.
And so he needs to find somebody. And this woman, she's the illegitimate daughter of the Rothschild, and she needs legitimacy.
Exactly.
So just like the shows, they marry each other so that he gets her money, she gets his title.
Wow.
Yep.
And that
is the true story.
And then what does she go on to fund?
He goes on to fund...
Well, but she does. With her money.
With her money, the discovery of King Tut's tomb.
Yeah.
He was the one who funded the discovery of that tomb.
Carter and everybody.
And down in the bottom of Highclere Castle, where the kitchens used to be, are many, many Egyptian artifacts, true artifacts from King Tut's
the
tomb.
The sarcophagus that you always recognize from Tutankhamun?
It's there.
Replica.
The replica's there, but then they have the
legitimate ones.
Yeah. It's
the actual ones.
And about how long ago did he live in this manor?
Well, that was the 1920s, 1920s and
30s. And he died. That actual lord died.
Get this.
Before.
Here's how he died.
Okay, he died before the actual tomb was discovered.
He died.
Oh. He was in Egypt and he was shaving.
No. He got a mosquito bite.
Oh my god, a mosquito bite.
It's not even like, oh, so malaria, right? No.
Got a mosquito bite.
He nicked it shaving and died from the infection.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, just when you think, you know,
you
talk about
us.
I know, such a crazy story. That's a great plot, right?
Right.
So that's where Julian's getting all his, you know, info.
Jeez.
That's where he's getting his material. A lot of grist for the mill there.
So that's what we have for news and gossip.
So what I want to find out, I don't know if anybody's asked Julian, did Julian write this?
Not based on, but write this
because he was helping his friend save this house, castle, manor thing, or did he say, you know, I just happened to this storyline. Can we use your place? That's interesting.
Right.
Because either way, it's fascinating. But I'm going, geez, if he was just helping out a friend, he sure did a great job.
Well, she wrote a book. Lady Carnarvon wrote a book, which is a New York Times bestseller, and that may have been another reason why he was very excited about doing it.
All right, so that's great.
So there you go. That's what I have for news and gossip.
Thank you very much, Tara.
That was such an interesting story. I'm sure. I don't know if I'll be able to find as good of news from here on out.
Really good.
All right, but that was terrific. Let's take us to predictions.
Let's get on with that.
Okay. Now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Oh, good heavens.
Alina, I don't want to put you on the spot. You said you had a great one.
Bless you. I just think there's going to be a lot of headbutting between Lord Grantham and Matthew. I don't know if Mary's either going to be torn or with her husband, you know, on her husband's side, because she is eyeing that position.
The way they've been going, she's going to be against Matthew.
Bless you.
They seem to put the conflict between the husband and wife rather than the father and the daughter. That's how they've usually gone so far.
Okay.
This episode, we've all talked about it, how this episode seemed to be one that was sort of setting things up.
Yeah, it's setting a lot
of... I'm looking forward to the drama that is potentially going to come with the next episode.
Well, we're going to see Sybil and Branson will be staying there throughout the pregnancy.
Yeah, so there will be conflict.
So we're
going to
have a birth.
Pardon me.
Edith is going to be a little journalist.
Yeah, so just like last week we were talking about, she's going to have to find something to do because they were telling her, look, we got to get something. So this is what she's decided. It's obviously taking off, so to speak, because I'm sure that right there is going to, the fact that somebody was interested in publish that letter, that's going to just propel her, something to do that.
Well, it's sort of the beginning of the tabloids of Britain.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That's right, the inside scoop.
Yeah,
inside skinny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Watch out for the tabloids of Britain. Just one more thing. There's spoiler alerts there.
Okay. don't watch that.
Don't read about Downton Abbey on the British news.
So, but what? Okay, then what? How is O'Brien going to do this? What is she going to do? How is she going to get back at Thomas? She's obviously going to. It's going to involve Footman Jimmy.
She's already
looking at that. She's going to try to do something.
She might kill two birds with one stone and get Footman Jimmy out of there too, so her nephew
can move up.
Alfred can move up.
That's
got to happen, right? Something.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
The only person she's nice to ever. Alfred.
Yeah, exactly, Alfred.
That's true. Good point. Yeah. I don't have any great predictions. No.
Bates, we got to get out of the prison somehow.
Yeah, he's going to get. I mean, just because it's bad TV keeping him in.
Yeah, we can't get him out. And you know, we got to move that story along. So, what do you think that's going to happen in the next episode or two down the line? Because we got to get him out of there.
Five left.
Yes, I believe
maybe
that's correct.
Maybe a couple.
I think in the next one or one after. We got it, like I said, it's bad TV keeping
it's
him in
boring. So
it's
you
boring keeping him in prison, so we got to get him out soon. Free baits.
So, all right, well, let everybody know we can get a hold of you.
At underscore Alina23 on Twitter.
I am at Tamara Berg, TamaraBerg on Twitter. And my website is TamaraCentral.com.
And I am out of time. So on behalf of Alina Akram, Tamara Berg, and Marissa Cervini, who's now helming for us because she took over for Stephen Lemieux,
right.
We want to thank you very much
for
listening. We will talk to you next week.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily...
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
We'll see you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.